Can we move on to your England career now? You might remember some of these games, perhaps one in particular. Yeah. Your first game was against New Zealand in November 2002.
My first start was.
And won. Yeah.
Yeah, that was my first start. I was on the bench for about 3 years.
Yeah. Sorry. I meant your first start.
Yeah. So my first start was New Zealand. So that was. Yeah, incredible experience.
Well, it must be, yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting, really, because I'd spent 2 or 3 years from my first cap in and out, injuries, sort of. So never really got any, even in and out at Gloucester a little bit. Like, my form was probably through the floor a little bit, and there was all sorts sort of going on in the summer of 2002. We toured Argentina, and Clive Woodward was thinking, I'm going to be a hooker. He was like, well, I'm running short of hookers. Like, there's you and Steve Thompson that could probably skillful enough to do it. And Steve Thompson came from the back row and into hooker. And so they had me sort of like throwing in for all of the Argentina tour, and went to South Africa with Gloucester to tour to Durban, pre-season tour.
Yeah.
The two games out there, I was hooker. And Dean Ryan and Nigel Melville was like, no, we're not going to persist with this. We're not, you know, it's too late in the day for you to change to hooker.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, the scrummaging, I loved. Yeah. Throwing it, not so much.
Of course, yeah.
I remember throwing a ball into Mark Cornwall 5 metres from my own try line, and the Sharks scored a try off it. One of those overthrows, so that's why they probably didn't last long. But from that summer, it was quite interesting because I'd come off the Argentina tour, Dave Flatman had jumped me in the pecking order, and I was frustrated with a lot of things, how we train. We used to run such long distance, and I'm not a long distance runner.
Yeah.
You know, fast twitch rather than slow twitch, explosive, short shuttles, all that, get thin. So I actually trained a lot with Phil Blakeway and Mike Teague. Yeah.
All right.
And just more for the mental, physical and the mental side, to train away from here, go down to the Church of Pain in Barnwood, run up Robinswood Hill, just doing things that, and so much of it was, who else is doing this at 6:30 in the morning?
Yeah.
Who else is putting themselves through this at 6:30 in the morning, and it's just giving you that edge. And you know, you got two such inspirational people, not just from what they've done playing wise, but just talking to them.
Yeah.
And off the back of that, and a few other things, obviously going well, playing well here. Dean Ryan and Nigel Melville starting to play this attacking brand of rugby. You know, yeah, strong set piece.
Yeah.
But a game that I thrived in, really.
Ball,
you know,
nice.
Yeah, I love playing and like ball, getting my hands on the ball, you know, absolutely loved it, whereas most props would shy away from touching the ball, wouldn't they? They'd be
what's this?
And that sort of that allowed then to, you know, I got myself into great, you know, form going into those autumn tests, and I got the starting spot over Leonard and Raintree and Flatman and to play the All Blacks doesn't happen very often back then. It might happen once a year now, but back then it was every 5-6 years the All Blacks would come on tour, and to beat them, it was a special day.
Yeah.
But the Twickenham crowd was off the charts that day in terms of noise.
Yeah.
25 minutes in, you could not hear a thing on the field. The crowd would just swing low, switch out everything. It was just, you're just like, and you're, you know, your lungs are burning. You think that you can't go anymore, but it just fuels you. It fuels you, and that's what international rugby should be about. That you are being pushed to the absolute limits, physically, mentally, skill wise, and definitely that day you felt that.
Yeah. Who were you propping against that day?
Case Muse.
Oh right.
Yeah, it was Case Muse I was up against. So yeah, it was good. It was all right. Sidestepped Joe Maloma that day. He went to tackle me and I sidestepped him. That's my most famous sidestep. It's Joe Maloma.
Wow. Did you work
So that was.
You did it. You didn't dream it, huh?
No. It's definitely fantastic. There. I can't tell you how many minutes in. Probably 21 minutes in, something like that. But yeah, it was. And I remember afterwards, the first thing I did was go straight to Berto's tent to see Phil, Blakeway, and Teague, because obviously they were there.
Yeah.
And just to almost sort of, you know, and see them and, you know, show my appreciation, because, you know, they'd done a lot of stuff behind the scenes that a lot of people wouldn't know about. And again, a lot of it was, you know, when you sort of like your form dips and you don't, you know, you're thinking, am I really, are my dreams and aspirations going to come true? Am I going to play for England? Yes or no? Because I was disappointed when I got left out of the 99 World Cup squad. Am I now going to miss out on the next one?
Yeah.
So you suddenly, you know, you question a lot about yourself.
But it all comes together.
And it all comes together. You just need a few people to you know, pump your tyres up, put some belief in you. You know, and then you start finding your form again. Yeah. You know, so it's you know, it's really important, those two guys.
What other England games? Obviously, the World Cup, just a second. Any other England games that stick out in your mind for particular reasons? Obviously, the All Blacks would be an outstanding one, but there were anything else?
Yeah, look, my England career in terms of playing was probably from 2002 to 2004,
yeah,
pretty much. So you literally went unbeaten for 18 months. You know, after that New Zealand game, well, on the Monday, I injured my neck and I was in having neck surgery. So I literally played me first and probably best game for England. And then the next 2 days later, we've hit a scrum machine and I can't lift my hand off the table. So you then think your career's gone.
Yeah.
But I remember the Ireland game, Grand Slam decider, over in Ireland in 2003. That was, you know, they were going for a Grand Slam, we were going for a Grand Slam. We lined up on the field, Jono lined up where Ireland are supposed to stand, because obviously the president of Ireland walks out and he's on the red carpet. Well, because we were playing right to left, Jono went and stood on the right because that's the way we were playing. And Ireland, Alec Adu came out and said, no, you got to stand this side. And John was like, we're not moving. Like, he's just like, clear off, mate. Like, because John was in the zone we're playing right to left, clear off. Yeah. You know, I don't think he was really thinking about it at the time. Yeah. So Ireland had to go and stand down literally near the 22. So the president walks out along the red carpet, halfway down the red carpet, there's no one to shake hands with. Then he shakes hands with the England team. And then he has to walk off the red carpet and shake the Ireland players.
Yeah.
And it was almost like a psychological advantage, bang, they're done.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, John's like, I'm not moving.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, and that was a cracking game. Because I don't think when there's a Grand Slam decided between two teams, the home team has always won it in the history of the Six Nations.
Yeah.
Or Five Nations, whichever, how far it goes back. So that was a massive game for me, because it was my first game, or pretty much second game back for England. I was off the bench, so that was a real important game. That one sticks in my memory. That gave us then the confidence and belief that, oh, we've actually won a Grand Slam, because we lost out Scotland away in 2000.
Yeah.
We lost one. We lost, like, there's been some dreadful ones, and then Australia away in the summer 2003 down in Melbourne. We toured New Zealand and Australia, and Clive said to Vix and I, he said, look, you're going to play the Maori game, you two will play that game, Trev, you're not going to play against the All Blacks, Vix, you're going to be on the bench, but you're both starting against Australia. And he had it planned out.
Was this the World Cup?
In the World Cup year.
Yeah.
So in the summer tour.
In June, summer tour
2003. We went on down and played New Zealand. That's when they had the infamous, sort of like, is it six-man scrum against
the All Blacks and
kept them out and so forth. So Vix was on the bench. Actually, there's only one prop on the bench back then, you see.
Yeah.
And fair play. Clive, they've just beat New Zealand. England just beat New Zealand, and he changes the team. and he puts me and Vixen to start over Leonard and Raintree.
Yeah.
Now he could have just gone, carry on.
Yeah.
But the pressure's on us then.
Yeah.
We've got to beat Australia. Like, when does England beat Australia in Australia? I'm not sure what's really happened. It was up to us then to perform, because the boys had just done it a week before against New Zealand. God, we now got to up our game. So that game was another memorable game, beating Australia in that summer tour before the World Cup.
So Henry Ray Woodward as a coach was.
I think you get two types of coaches. You get guys that are great at management. And can coach, or you get the guys that are just great at coaching, and probably the man management needs working on.
Yeah.
And I think he probably had more man management than coaching. He surrounded himself with great coaches.
Right.
Of course, he understood the game. He knew the game inside out and everything. And he knew how he wanted to play, and you know, so he got his coaches to coach the way that he wanted us to play, and so forth. And the man management of the squad and everyone else, he basically gave us an environment that was just built on success. We're going to give you all the tools required for us to be successful. Everything, whatever, how, probably the clothes we wore, just simple things, the best shoes, the best suit, like from Hackett or wherever it is, you just made yourself feel, 10 foot tall. The travel, the best hotels, you sort of, very, probably, well, we want to be the best in the world. Yeah. That was the aim. We want to win a World Cup. Well, how are we going to do that if I don't give you the best?
It's interesting, because I was in South Africa watching, I can't remember what he's down there for, but he'd moved his. The team was staying in a hotel just outside Cape Town, and he didn't think it was good enough, the hotel was a 3-4 so whatever, and he moved on to the Mount Nelson, which is probably the best hotel at that time, and insisted that the RFU, in fact I think he paid for it himself,
I think he did, so
to make sure all the players,
that was the tour of hell,
that's the one, that's
in 1998, there was a few boys from Gloucester that went on that, Tony Window, Simsy, Tom Byrne, Fids.
Fids was on,
Vix.
That's what we were, because I was there with Fids.
There was a few Gloucester boys that. So a lot of the Lions from 97 didn't go.
Yeah.
So they had the summer off, because the World Cup was following year, so I think Clive was like, you're not going. The RFUs or the unions probably said, right, we're going to go to Australia, then New Zealand, fly to Hong Kong, back down to South Africa to play them. And it was like the tour of hell in terms of logistically, it was absolutely shocking. And I think he got to South Africa and he realised that the boys had been 76-0 against Australia, smashed against the All Blacks, and then you got South Africa coming up. And, back then, I think the home nation would always supply the hotel, the training field. Like, they would do all that. Well, of course, they're not going to give you the best hotel and the best training field, and they're going to make you travel from hotel to training field and make life as difficult as possible. And I think he got there and just went, enough. And that's probably, from that point on, it's, coaches will now go with their performance or team manager, and they go, and when you're on a tour somewhere, well, let's go and see where we're staying. Now that we're so far in, 20-odd, 30 seasons of professional, everyone pretty much knows where to stay, what the hotel is, but I guarantee Borthwick, I think, has been out to Australia in the last month after the Six Nations, looking at where they're training, where the gym is, where the hotel is, how does it all work together, then, because if you don't, you're just, that's the sort of detail that goes into it now.
As a layman watching, you don't reload all that goes into
it. You've got to work all, that's all got to be worked out. There's so much kit and everything that has to be transported around, and
big business, it's
crazy now, and if you're not on top of that, or you haven't pre-planned it, so I'm sure him and Richard Hill were out there going, we're playing so and so here, this is what this looks like, then we're going to have a 2-day break, are we flying, are we staying here, what are we doing, they'll all be planning all of that. before you get there.